Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. Welcome back to all of our She Said sisters to another episode of the She Said Project podcast. I am your host, Jeanette Jerzyk, National Director of the She Said Project. In the studio with me, Miss Carrie Rosso.
Hi. Hey.
Carrie, always a pleasure. You are one of the founders of the She Said Project. Your whole mission, your whole purpose of making this world a better place for the women in your life, including your daughters.
Absolutely. Women exchanging stories.
And how has this journey been for you?
I'm sorry. I felt so fancy when you said journey. I've been on a journey. Who knew I was on a journey?
But who knew back in 2013 when you came up with this idea that there would have been, we're going on 6 live shows, our first podcast. We have a YouTube channel which airs all of the live stories that have been shared on the She Said stage. This is more than just an event or a show. It is a movement of women supporting women through the power of storytelling.
And it is. It's a powerful thing that women, it's not new. We're not doing anything new.
What we are doing is creating a safe space, a platform for women to stand up, be brave, be vulnerable, and share those personal stories.
We're giving women's stories a microphone.
That's right. And you know who we gave a microphone to not too long ago?
Mary Enright.
That's right. Mary Enright is on the line with us. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
So, Mary, you were a featured speaker in the 2016 cast in Champaign-Urbana. What was that experience like for you?
It was amazing. I was not expecting the behind-the-scenes sisterhood that accompanied being a part of the project. I was thinking more about show day and all of that glory that was going to be coming to me. I had no idea about the relationships that would be fostered behind the scenes, and I'm still in contact with actually everybody in the cast to some degree from my season, to some degree or another. And it's a beautiful thing. It is some of the fastest, deepest relationships I've ever formed with other women.
Because when you share stories, you are cutting through all the superficial junk that we as women tend to fall into and cutting right to those personal, intimate moments where you get to connect and to bond.
Yes, I remember sitting back to the very first rehearsal, meet and greet, whatever you want to call it, in Carrie's living room. And we came in there as strangers, not really knowing each other. And as the night progressed and we went around and told our very, watered down version of the story that we would be presenting, it was just like the bond just started to like grow and tighten. And by the end of that night, I think I was hugging people goodbye. It was just amazing.
Well, there was nothing watered down about the story that you did share with us that one fateful evening in October of 2016. You were very brave sharing something that you had been through in your story called Afternoon Delight. Tell our listeners a little bit about why you shared the story that you did.
The story Afternoon Delight touches on my personal battle with addiction of all sorts. And I chose this topic because it is at my core. I mean, everything I do, it touches in some way or another, but that doesn't have to be debilitating. It is just a part of who I am. I am an addict. And that is just part of my story. It doesn't mean that I am crippled by it. It doesn't mean that it is the only thing that defines me, but it is definitely a part of who I am. And I wanted to be able to share that part of myself openly without shame and hopefully connect to somebody else who also has that as a part of them, but does not want to let it define them.
And that it makes me think of sort of the camaraderie and the sisterhood you were talking about. And Jeanette and some other people in the She Said family always talk about it being serendipitous or meant to be. And as hard as I fight and roll my eyes and say, things.
Serendipity
just
is a thing, Carrie.
Yes. But your cast, your season, I think was the most powerful, and sitting back and sort of watching the power of sharing stories. It was life-changing
palpable.
For the rest of us.
It was palpable that night. And there were women in the audience that night who had similar struggles. And I know that there's women who are listening to us right now that have struggled with addiction and are going to take something away from hearing you share your story with us, Mary. So we're going to go to the live clip from That's What She Said 2016. Mary Enright, Afternoon Delight.
My name is Mary. and I'm an addict. But don't worry, I'm in recovery, not going to steal your stuff. As an addict, there are big chunks of my past that are super fuzzy, or that I simply don't remember. But see, that was kind of the point. I couldn't handle life the way that everyone else seemed to handle life. It was too intense for me. Or maybe I'm just too sensitive. Regardless, when faced with any sort of emotion, good, bad, stressful, sorrow, love, any, I couldn't handle it. So I had to escape. And that's what addiction is. It's escapism taken to the extreme. So when first brainstorming about this little exercise, I had planned on telling you all the story of my last drunk, when I assaulted someone with a salsa jar. But then I thought, maybe that's not super relatable to the general public, for good reason, yeah. So I'll just save that one for the after party. On occasion, upon learning I'm an addict, someone will ask me, "What's your drug of choice?" The answer is simple. What do you got? You see, in my active addiction, I would take anything I could get my hands on to take the edge off and give me a false, though comforting, sense of security. Uppers, downers, alcohol, street drugs, food, men, exercise, clothes. Whatever I think will distract me from the way that I'm feeling, I'm game to try. And that absolutely 100% includes good feelings, too. I can't handle good, just like I can't handle bad. And it may actually be worse. Good stuff is scary. Good stuff can be ripped away. Good stuff is a tease. So when too much good comes into my life, I have a tendency to freak out. And yes, I know that doesn't make any sense, but not everything in life does. Shortly after I got sober from drugs and alcohol, I began dating an amazing man. Today, I'm lucky enough to be able to call him my husband. But at the time, he was just my super hot, 10 years younger than me, boyfriend. I know. Well, early sobriety is a lot like trying to get over any other sickness. It's not an immediate stop using and suddenly you're cured type of thing. There is definitely a recuperation period. Kind of like if you've had the stomach flu for the past 15 years, it's probably going to take at least a long weekend before you feel like eating chili cheese dogs and going on the tilt-a-whirl again. That's what early sobriety's like. It's a healing time. And, at least for me, it took a while before I could get my strength back up to a point where I could manage my emotions in any sort of reasonable way. Now, obviously, when dealing with major addiction, the goal is to cut out the most harmful and volatile components first, and then you can work your way through the less dangerous ones. So drugs, alcohol, and self-harm were the first to go, leaving me with a nice little menagerie of lesser, though still totally necessary, evils. Disordered eating actually popped up big time for me during this period. That's a pretty broad description, I know, but it's a pretty broad problem. I'll just say, I was desperately trying to control my intake, was unable to do so, and would feel extreme guilt and shame when I failed. So, basically the exact same cycle as any addiction. One day, I was home alone in the house that I shared with my then boyfriend, and I decided, very innocently, that I wanted to have a small bowl of ice cream as a treat to kind of reward myself and to prove that I could have a small bowl of ice cream alone in the middle of the afternoon and that there was nothing wrong with that. And that may be true for others, but for me, at that early stage of my recovery, it was likely going to be impossible. Why? Because ice cream makes me feel good, so I will use it until I feel horrible. What happened is I had a single, small, socially acceptable bowl of ice cream. But then I wanted another. And hey, I mean, that's still normal, right? I mean, doesn't anyone that has a little bit of ice cream actually kind of wish they had more than just a little? So I had another. And another. And then I just stopped messing around with the bowl altogether and went straight to town. Before I knew what had happened, I had eaten almost the entire half gallon. But then the shame and fear set in. And I knew my super cute boyfriend was going to come home and see that I had eaten all of the ice cream and would probably break up with me because I was gross and didn't know how to share. So I did what anyone would do in that situation. First, I consciously said, screw it, the damage is done, and polished off the rest of the carton. Then I put the empty carton in a plastic bag, got in the car, drove to the store, threw it away, went inside and purchased the exact same brand and flavor of ice cream, drove back home, and ate exactly one small bowl out of the new carton to appear normal. And I felt better. But not really. My addiction felt secure, so that's a good thing. But I've just eaten an entire half gallon of ice cream, and I feel really gross about it. And shockingly, I also have a pretty bad stomach ache. Now, the plan was to not even say anything at all when my boyfriend got home, because it is so totally normal to have a small bowl of ice cream alone in the middle of the afternoon. And if you look at the carton in the freezer, it is very clear that that is all I had. But for some reason, when he got home, I couldn't lie to him. Not even through omission. Which I'll tell you is a testament to him, not me. Because I have lied to a bunch of people in my life to cover my addiction and not felt bad about it in the slightest. So when he walked in the front door and said, "Hi, how was your day?" The very first words out of my mouth were, "There's a carton of ice cream in the freezer, but it's not the same carton of ice cream that was in there before." It was a little awkward. So after I told him everything, probably in way more detail than was really necessary, especially since I'm trying to stem the appearance of crazy here, all he said was, "I'm sorry you felt like you needed to do that." And it hit me, though certainly not for the last time, who it was I was really hurting.
So, Mary, that was a funny story, but also a very touching story about losing control in the, you know, in the process of recovery. It's been some time since you've shared that. Where are you at now in your journey?
Well, I'm still sober. I'm still in recovery. So that's every day. That's the number one goal.
Hey, we celebrate you. That's
thank you.
That's not to be taken for granted.
You know, yeah, yes and no. I appreciate that very much. It's important for me, though, also to stay humble, because I will start giving myself a parade for something that I should probably just be doing anyway, you know?
like getting your children to pick up their toys is a big celebration.
Yes,
in the Enright House.
Everyday victories. I think it's important to keep an element of comedy when we are dealing, for me, when I'm dealing with such heavy and personal subject matter. One, because for me, humor has always been a defense mechanism, like a coping mechanism. And also, once you start to take a step back from a lot of our behaviors and addiction, It is humorous. It doesn't make sense. It's baffling. And I think that's such an interesting dichotomy. Like when we're in it, it all makes sense. This is the next logical step. Like when I was telling that story, I felt like I had to go to the grocery store. It was the next logical step. But like stepping back and being able to put it on paper and share that with other people, it's ridiculous. You know,
probably could have gotten away with just telling the truth.
Well, but that's the beauty of how you tell stories, Mary. You have that ability to talk about hard things while everyone is laughing. And, you know, we always say we want to talk about all the things. We want to talk about the hard things. And sometimes it softens that blow if we're laughing and then you can say the hard thing.
Yes, very much. I agree with that. I can't say I do it intentionally, again, because I think that it is. It's just something where it has been ingrained in me. I think it's easier for me to go for the laugh sometimes than it is to maybe fully put myself out there. But that's what I really appreciated about the behind-the-scenes coaching that Carrie, you and Jeanette did to kind of draw that out of me. I don't know if you recall my very first draft.
I do.
I thought was hilarious, but was probably not very relatable to the general public as far as like what my very last drunk was like. So
I appreciated
having you guys be able to, you know, to help me find that happy medium.
Well, because the beauty of your story was so many people afterward, what you showed was addiction is not just alcohol or drugs. It can be disordered eating. It can be so many different things.
Relationships.
That you might not be able to, no one might label the whole ice cream situation, might not connect that to addiction. But then hearing your story and laughing about it, you know, it sort of held up a mirror to people who had addictions that didn't fit the stereotype of what that looked like.
I hope so. Yeah.
Well, and the great thing, I was thinking about the old joke when you were talking about humor, and I think so many, you know, the joke of, you know, your therapist accuses you of using humor to deflect, and the response is, so you're saying I'm funny. And it's like, yeah,
exactly.
I love that. Like, yeah, so the takeaway here is that I'm funny, right?
That's always the number one goal. I mean, forget, you know, I mean, it's not, but, you know, it feels like it is in the moment. But
right.
But you did tackle a really hard topic and made it palpable for other people to hear and to relate to. And so when you were done speaking, I mean, what was that night like for you? What was that energy of being in the room with hundreds of women sharing that moment with you?
It was amazing. For as much as I love the spotlight, I also kind of have that part of my personality where I don't want anybody to talk about how much they love me. I just want for them to like love me from a distance. So having people come up to me afterwards and say very kind, awesome things, that was a little weird. And it was also a little weird because from where I was sitting, I was so impressed with the strength and the beauty and the humor and the talent of the other women that performed that night. And I was very grateful I got to go first because I got to just kind of do my thing and sit back and enjoy the rest of the show. It was an extremely empowering moment to be able to get up and say out loud something that at one point in time would have caused me so much shame. And something that we say in the recovery community is we're only as sick as our secrets. And that night took away a giant secret. You know, I've made jokes about it on social media. My husband is well aware of the fact of my disordered eating history, but to be able to get up and say it in that venue and knowing full well that this is being recorded for eternity and will be able to be accessed on YouTube.
And now on the She Said Project podcast.
Yes, yes. You know, even now, but like, it's really interesting too, because in different aspects of my recovery, as I progress, I'm able to talk about more and more things that at one point in time caused me some degree of shame. And the reason why I'm able to talk about those freely is because I no longer do those behaviors, but I have to kind of cease doing the thing to be able to talk about it in an open manner that isn't going to get at me emotionally, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to point out something you said that really struck me is that the camaraderie you said of being with those women on the stage in that moment, that's what she said is different than a typical performance where you are a speaker alone on a stage, where the environment is created to have all the women share in that experience together. And I'm so glad that you felt that, because I've always thought that is part of the power of the That's What She Said Live event.
It really is. And I mean, I had heard those stories dozens of times from the other women. I remember I have a half hour drive from my house to my place of employment, and I would just run my story over and over again in my head, and I could get through it about three times before I got to work. And so I knew that story inside and out, but it came out differently the night of. And I knew the other performers' stories inside and out. Like, we could give each other the next line if need be, but to watch them perform, to stand up, and the level of emotion that came up, that try as hard as we might, never came up in any of the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just amazing.
It is the power of being in that moment. And so, you know, we appreciate that you gave your time and shared your story with the live audience in Champaign, Urbana. And now through the podcast, we appreciate that you're allowing us to share your story with even more women who can benefit from hearing what you have to say. That's a wrap for us here at the She Said podcast. Carrie, you ready?
I am, but I just keep putting it off because I could just listen to Mary talk all day.
I know. She is an absolute afternoon
you
delight.
Stop it.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of the She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives. Learn more at sterlingwealthmanagement.com.